looking back, we're going to say, holy crap, I wish I would have bought as much as I could in 2025 while a lot of people were sitting there.
Right.
I think on the short-term rental side, long-term, the future looks very bright.
Oh, yeah.
The consumer has shown that there's really no dips in demand. We're seeing year-over-year growth in almost every market we look at. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our Whiskey Wednesday segment with Mr. Jake Sheehy.
Hello, hello, hello. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm feeling good today. Today's going to be a great episode. I'm excited.
Are you excited about this? What are we talking about? I know we're talking about a little bit about the market, but what specifically?
We're diving in. Is now a good time to buy? We're going to talk about financing options, inventory, the hottest markets. We're going to talk about, is it a good time to sell? Analysis paralysis, why some people are on the sidelines, what we think is going to happen in the future. We're going to go over a lot of good stuff today, but right now, and we're going to throw you into the fire. You ready?
I'm ready.
Is now a good time to buy? Yes or no?
Oh, coming out hot.
Why? Why do you think it is?
All right. So yeah, I think it's an amazing time to buy. Okay. I really think that looking back in 3 to 5 years, we're going to look back and say 2025 was possibly one of our best buying opportunities that we've ever seen in the short-term rental markets. And there's a few reasons for that. Mm-hmm. And one is we are buying single family homes. We're still seeing the supply and demand gap fairly wide. We're seeing inventory levels start to spike and we're starting to go up, which they're, you know, year over year, they're going up like almost 30% in a lot of these markets, which is a great thing as a buyer, right? For a buyer, I want to see more inventory. That we've been struggling with three major things as buyers: very low inventory, very high interest rates, and very high prices. Mm. And so first thing we have to do is bridge that inventory gap a little bit and say, okay, we need more inventory to look at. We need more supply. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see more homes hit the market, which is really good for us as buyers. It starts to stabilize some of the prices. Some of the prices are we're able to negotiate. We're able to get out there and, you know, talk to sellers, figure out, make good deals. Sometimes we're getting creative financing. There's a lot of different options when sellers or in a buyer's market, when we have more to choose from as a buyer and the sellers aren't just calling all the shots and making all the rules like they have the last 7 or 8 years, right? And so that's a good thing as a buyer.
Okay.
Even prices are not skyrocketing right now. They're kind of leveling off. Some markets are still going up a bit because of inventory levels still being where they're at. But overall, it feels really good as a buyer to be starting to see a few more properties on the market. Right. Interest rates, still a challenge. Stabilizing, but not really going down a whole lot. And I don't know that they're going to go down. I think 2025 is going to be a bit choppy when it comes to that. But also, why would I say it's one of the best opportunities to buy, right? Because the other flip side of this is when there is a lot of bad news and there's a lot of things going on and a lot of economic uncertainty, most of that uncertainty is in people's heads, right? I always say words talk, numbers scream. And you really can't, you have to read between the lines of all the news articles and all the talking heads that are out there and telling you all these different things. Just look at the data and see what the data shows you. Right. And depending on what type of asset class you're buying, there is data that's going to show you the demand on the back end. Like, what am I going to do with this property? Am I going to fix and flip it? If I'm going to fix and flip it and I'm in a buyer's market, then I'm going to be selling in a buyer's market, which means I might not be in a, like, it might not be the best opportunity to, in a market like this, to buy a property, add value, and then flip it because prices are kind of stabilized. They're, you know, buyers are uncertain. There's a lot of people sitting on the sidelines right now. We saw a record $7.3 trillion dollars sitting in money market accounts. People put money in money market accounts because they want to sit on the sideline and wait and see, right? And so when everybody's waiting, you know, the famous line from Warren Buffett, it's like, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. Well, we had the fearful when others were greedy the last 7 to 10 years. We're getting to that point where everybody's fearful and it's our time as investors to start saying, hey, now's the time to start really looking for these opportunities, taking advantage of these opportunities because we're not competing with a lot of people. We have more to choose from. We also are looking at it in our world from the short-term rental world and seeing that the consumer is spending a lot of money and they continue to spend a lot of money on short-term rentals.
Yeah, that's not slowing down.
Yeah, and so right now I think that there's a lot of things lining up in our favor as investors to be able to say, hey, I'm going to take some of that capital and I'm going to start loading the bases, because this is now the time to load the bases so that when that market does shift, and it always does, you've got that those base hits turn into home runs really quick. I'm coming to a city near you. That's right. Me and my team of expert advisors are going to be traveling around the United States teaching people just like you how to acquire, manage, and market a successful short-term vacation rental. We're going to be hosting live two-day events to help investors mitigate their risks and maximize their returns with short-term vacation rentals. At these live events, you're not only going to hear from me, but I'm going to also bring my team of experts, CPAs, lenders, photographers, designers, managers, and my marketing experts. So if you're looking to learn more about investing in profitable lifestyle assets, or you want actionable steps on how to revitalize your struggling property, then come join us live and in person where we can shake your hand, meet you, and get all of those questions answered. Tickets start at general admission and work their way up to ultra VIP. So you can buy your tickets today by clicking the link in the description or by visiting Eventbrite and searching Vacation Rental Investing Masterclass. Once again, click the link in the description or visit Eventbrite and search Vacation Rental Investing Masterclass to get your tickets today.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so now someone's fired up, man. They're excited. This is the time to buy. What's a good way for them to acquire the property?
With caution, right? Like these are like great opportunities, great times to buy,
right?
But you better know what the heck you're doing,
right?
Right, and you better really understand how to run numbers, how to look at what you're doing, and how to be able to make educated decisions, because these opportunities right now are not wrapped up in a bow and they don't say, hey, this is the greatest opportunity in the world. Do you want to buy it? A lot of times they're beat up, they're broke down, they don't look like good opportunities. Everybody from the outside is telling you it's not a good market, it's not the time, things are going to go down, you know, things are choppy. You have to be able to read between the lines. And so I say with caution, because you don't just go throw caution to the wind and buy anything and everything, because you will probably in these times still say no to probably 80 to 90% of the deals you look at.
Wow.
If you're really good at finding opportunities.
Yeah.
If you're not very good at opportunities, you're going to be saying no to 95, 99% of the opportunities that you come across. And so that can be really frustrating, right? On one time I'm saying, hey, it's a really good time to buy. There's more to choose from. Right. But on the flip side is there's still stuff that's overpriced. There's things that don't underwrite, markets that don't work well for short-term rentals. You have to really understand both the buying side of life, the the market you're buying into, values in those markets, what the average appreciation is over a 20, 40-year time horizon, not the last 3 or 4 years. Like I'm really looking at the numbers to paint a really good picture. And so as I start to navigate, I always tell people the first place you want to do is go educate yourself on how to underwrite. Right. And, you know, shameless plug, go to vodacy.com/datasense and that will give you access and you can get all of our underwriting tools for a fraction. These are the same underwriting tools we have for our high-end mastermind groups that people are paying multiple five figures for. And so it's the exact same process for a fraction of that. For 97 bucks, you can go get all of my underwriting tools. So
come on.
I'm just, you know, that's a, we don't run sponsorships or ads, but I just ran one.
There you go, right there.
But that's where I'd start. You better understand. And this goes for those listeners that own properties. You still analyze and underwrite deals and properties that you have to figure out where you're performing. Where is the, how much money are you leaving on the table? What's the potential for you? What do we need to be doing to operate at a better clip? But if I'm going to be buying a property, I'm writing a big check, I better really understand the underwriting. And I'm not taking the advice. I never let anybody else underwrite my deals. So I'd start there. I'd start by knowing the numbers.
Okay. I was also thinking, like, when you were saying 80% of the properties or 90, 95% of the properties, I'm like, oh man, that, I guess that could seem like it's annoying or maybe even a struggle, but at this, on the flip side of that coin, now you have so much more inventory to really find a good one.
Yeah.
No, you were limited a little bit back then, and so it was kind of tougher, but now you can really weed through and find the best possible one. So that's amazing. Okay, so now I kind of have a question on, you know, this is a good buying time. Do a lot of our members when you look across the board, is there kind of like a price point that most of them will buy at? Is that kind of even really a thing? Or do you notice that some people, they get really excited, they buy a really expensive property out the gate, but then kind of lack design and kind of the other, the photography? Or would you even advise, hey, maybe go below the budget, go for a cheaper property? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah, so two questions. One is there an average price point?
Yeah.
No, there's really not. Okay. Every market has kind of a sweet spot, but it doesn't, like if you have a $2 million budget, there are going to be markets that you can't go spend $2 million. It would make no sense to go spend $2 million in certain markets. There's other markets, if I have a $300,000 or $400,000 budget, there's markets I can't enter into at $300,000 or $400,000.
Right.
And so one, you have to have your own budget guidelines, and that's going to dictate certain markets that are available to you to go invest in. And so every market has a sweet spot that we're looking at. And, but again, it always goes back to the numbers. Mm-hmm. It always goes back to being able to effectively analyze different markets, different properties, the investability of different markets. And the investability is going to be a big factor of that investability is the acquisition costs in those markets for what you're trying to buy. And so certain markets are a little bit more investable than others. I wouldn't say that there's a sweet spot. I would say on average, it feels like most people we talk to are somewhere in that $500,000 to $700,000 or $800,000 range.
Okay.
It kind of that bread and butter sweet spot type of a property. And I think, but that's more dictated on their personal buying power, their personal finance options and money available.
Right.
Second part of that question is, should I spend the money on the property or should I make sure that I buy less of a property to make sure I can get it to the finish line?
Yes.
The answer to that is definitely spend less on the property. Make sure you can do what you need to get it to the finish line because there is a lot of money being spent by the consumer. However, the consumers are very selective on the properties they're willing to spend the majority of their money on.
Right.
And if we buy properties in good investable markets and we set them up correctly to create a unique experience and we deliver that experience and articulate that experience on a very high level, the consumer is willing to pay us more than every other property out there. Now, on the flip side, if I just have a beautiful property that's designed by a designer, it looks like a model home, guess what? So does everybody else.
I love it when you say it like that.
It just becomes a commodity, right? And so, you know, the biggest mistake that we see happening over the last 3 or 4 years is that people are just buying really nice properties. They're furnishing in them beautifully. I'm not saying that they're not. I mean, we're way past the days where people are putting secondhand furniture in their vacation homes.
Right.
I'm not saying that. Right. So hear me when I say that there are commodities out there that are professionally designed, that have beautiful design, and they're beautiful properties, but so are their neighbors, and so is every other property on their street. And so all of a sudden, they all just blend together. You have to be able to take that extra amount of money and really tell the story with your property, really bring it to life, and making sure that you have the budget to do so. Usually, that budget's going to equal close to your down payment. And so if I've got X amount saved up for a down payment and I qualify for a certain amount, I have to have almost an equal amount to furnish these properties. Usually I'm going to be somewhere, if I'm putting 10% down, I need 10 to 12% on the back end to furnish and set up a property.
Okay.
Usually somewhere around $40 a foot, right? Okay. And so depending on if you want a more exact answer, it's going to be closer to a per square foot basis.
Okay.
But also, you can spend $40 a foot with any designer you want. I mean, they're like, hey, listen, for $40 a foot, I can do really nice furnishings. I can put this property together really nice. But it's being not only having the budget, but also intentionally selecting the right type of design, which is more of a commercialized, like experiential design than just model home design.
Right.
Right. But it is for sure, you do not want to spend all your money on the down payment acquisition of the property because all of a sudden you're going to end up with a really nice property and so does a lot of other people in your market and you're going to be wondering, why am I not making money with this? This guy Sean is saying there's a lot of money to be made and I'm not making any money. Well, you didn't dial that part in and you didn't save up enough.
And if that's you with your property right now, contact us, support@vodyssey.com. we'll get you on the right steps.
It's really, really every single week. You know, I talk to people all week long. I mean, I've got meetings all day, every day. We've got our finger on the pulse of what works. We also have our finger on the pulse of what doesn't work. And there are so many properties that are struggling right now that are not working, that are so close to working. They're just having to dial that last 5 or 10% in. And so they just, they just stopped at this beautiful model home, and we need to get that last 10% to have this memorable home, not the model home.
Right? I love it. Okay, now this kind of is, it goes into a fun little question I have here.
Okay,
so now that it's a good buying time, right? So the question is, if you were to buy a home now, what market and what would you look for specifically? Are you looking for a two bed, two bath, you know, couples? Are you going big with families, or what's your thought? My thought process was, I'm going Alaska, igloo style. Okay. The Northern Lights is my theme. That going everything well, Northern
tell
Lights.
Me, tell them what your real dream is, because I already know.
That, okay. Yeah. That was a fun one. The real dream is the glamping experience, but not really glamping. Yeah. I would do naked and afraid style couples, naked and afraid. You guys get like nothing. You get maybe some water and some like flint and steel to make your fire.
Do they get to choose their weapon? We're
gonna give them a map of the property and then maybe like, I don't know. I feel like you can't give them like a knife or anything, or like a hatchet. I don't want them chopping down trees or anything, but maybe like some flint and steel to make the fire or something. I don't know, but very like naked and afraid experience is what I was going
to
do.
Right. Like a scripted out, like they have like tasks they have to complete. Tasks, yeah. I like it.
That would be mine.
Okay.
What are you thinking?
I know you love, you keep talking about the naked and afraid. I mean, one day you're going to put this together.
Dude, I think so. I think that's going to be what I'm going to go for.
Yeah.
But what about you? What do you think? What are you doing?
You know, right now, going back to what you're saying, all that works really well, because what it is it's an experience, right? People pay for experiences.
Yeah.
And so you're really dialing in a very specific experience. Mm-hmm. For us, right now, we're really leaning into the college experience. We love. Like, I'm really excited about college towns, college experience. I feel like that business is exploding when it comes to college athletics.
Okay,
it's becoming basically professional sports organizations.
Yeah,
that have pretty, you know, pretty good followings and already built in, and the demand's there. We're really leaning into that type of an experience.
Okay.
But I always am hesitant to say what I'm doing or what, you know, we think is the best idea, because it almost sometimes comes across as, hey, this, we're forgetting about the vacation experience. We're forgetting about, you know, just a regular traditional, hey, multi-generational family coming to a vacation area. How are we going to set up an experience there? There's a lot of money being spent by those types of travelers as well. And so it's really picking your target audience, creating an experience for them, wherever it is, bringing the area to life, telling the story with your property, really immersing your guests into the area and the property and amenities and everything else that your property has, the area has, and just bring it to life. And it really doesn't matter at the end of the day what that experience is if the consumer's spending money in those markets.
Mm, I love it. Okay. All right, now we're moving on to the flip side of this coin. We talked about now is a good time to buy, right? Now let's go on the flip side here. Is now a good time to sell? You know, this could be if someone has a property and, man, it's been bogging them down for too long, and they're questioning, should I even sell this thing? Is this even worth selling it?
Yeah.
And if so, what do they do with it? Do they roll this into a new property, try again in a better market, and really dial it in this time? Or what do you think?
Yeah, so if they're selling because their property's not performing the way they want it to perform,
right,
they need to look in the mirror and say, am I willing to do what it takes to perform with this property or any other property that I buy? Because 99% of the time, it's not the market.
Right.
It's not that things shifted around on you. It's that you're not looking in the mirror and taking responsibility to take the actions you need to take to perform at the top of the market, period. It is what it is. That's where most people are at. There's a lot of people struggling right now. They're unwilling to do that. They jumped into the short-term rental game. They're hearing a lot of talking heads talk about the markets and they're shifting and this and that and the other. I was just hearing somebody else that's a fairly well-known influencer in quotation marks in this space, right? And saying, don't ever buy in a market that they're building a bunch of short-term rentals, because that means that there's going to be so much more supply and inventory and everybody's going to have more properties. Well, the developers are building those properties because there's demand.
Right.
And that's really good advice. But what it needs to say is, don't buy in these markets if you're not willing to do what it takes to operate and create your unfair advantages in markets that the consumer's spending. Because, and then you should say, if you want to try to find an up-and-coming market and roll the dice, you know, which might be better to go to roulette on and put black or red, right?
Right.
But let's just say we go to an up-and-coming market. There's not as much competition. It's less saturated, which is what this influencer guru is telling people to do. I promise you that tomorrow or the next day mm-hmm. or someday in the future, mm-hmm. that supply is going to increase in that market, because if it's a good market and consumers yeah. are going there and spending a lot of money, mm-hmm. investors are going there too.
Yeah.
And they're buying properties.
Yeah.
So guess what you did? You might have had, which is what a lot of people did. Mm. They had a nice little 2-year runway where supply and demand in some of these markets was a little bit skewed, right? Mm-hmm. There was more demand than there was supply. Supply always catches up. In any major market, in anything like we're talking about major asset classes, if money's being spent, investors will show up and they will have something to offer. And so instead of delaying the education of understanding what you need to do to operate in a crowded market,
right.
get your unfair advantages, get your unfair share of business,
right.
and dominate at the top of the market, even in the most crowded markets. That's what I would be spending my time doing, not saying, well, because I was interested in this market, well, Branson, Missouri has a whole bunch of developers building short-term vacation rental developments. I'm going to stay out of Branson. How many members do we have that are crushing it in Branson? And they're doubling down over and over in these developments. Yeah. They're purpose-built. I own a property in a purpose-built community with 400 homes. They're exactly the same.
Yeah.
But guess what? We operate at the top of that market and we get our unfair share of business. And so I would much rather see somebody say, hey, listen, go learn what it takes to actually succeed, where the consumers are spending the money, because those developments that are popping up like that are being, the developers are smart, right? Institutional money is pretty smart money. And they go develop properties and they look at demand, they look at consumer behavior, and they say, hey, listen, there's going to be a lot of people coming here. There's going to be a lot of demand for these types of properties. And because there's demand, there's investors that are also interested in them. And so we're going to go there. As an investor, if you're looking for the easy road, the easy road sometimes is easier in the beginning than the hard road, right? We always have choices. It's saying, hey, listen, do I want to push the easy button, or do I want to push the road less traveled and take this road that's a little bit harder? The path's not as paved, everything else. That road is always harder in the beginning, but way easier at the end, because you learned the skills to operate where somebody else didn't learn the skills to operate, get their unfair share of business. And that road gets a lot harder, because all of a sudden when you become a commodity, it's really hard to compete outside of price. And that's what he's saying is, hey, listen, you're going to buy in this market and become a commodity, which probably is true. 80% of people become commodities. So what he's saying is actually not true, but just say it how it really is. Yeah. Hey, if you're unwilling to do what it takes, don't buy in these markets.
Right. Well, it seems kind of interesting that it's like a fear, in my opinion, it's kind of like a fear-based mentality of, oh, I don't want to go into that market because it's too saturated. Yeah. So that tells me you don't have the belief that you are able or capable or able to learn how to stand out, how to get the unfair share of business. You're too afraid to really dive into this process. But then also, if you just jump into the really crowded marketplace, and it doesn't seem like you're leveling your emotions enough to like be prepared to jump in. You're just hearing, oh, there's a lot of demand there, so let me just get in there, right? But you're not really taking any of the steps. You're just kind of, you're either too fearful or too excited, but you have to have a real steady game plan with this.
Yeah. And to me, it's not even a fear-based mentality. Okay. It's a victim mentality. It's, hey, I don't want to take responsibility for actually doing well. And so I'm going to try to find markets that either dictate that I do well, or markets like I want something to blame. Like if I don't do well, it's the market.
Yeah.
It's the saturation. It's this, it's that, it's the other.
Yeah.
We're past the point of that right now. I mean, we're way past the point of it being we're market dependent on our success in the short-term rental game. There's way too much money being spent by the consumer. It's a mainstream asset class. When there's as much money as there's being spent right now, there is our ability to go say, if I take personal responsibility to learn how to play this game at a high level, and I go implement and take action on the things that are necessary for me to get my unfair advantages in this game, then all of a sudden I can operate at the top. Or I can sit back and I can say, well, my management company says it's the market. Other investors are struggling.
Right.
The market's shifting. The economy's crappy. This and that and the other. All these different things. When you start hearing, it's not my fault, just say, hey, I'm just going to play the victim for a while.
Yeah.
I promise you, eventually you're going to say, I better get out of playing the victim. And I can say this because I have played the victim before in my life. And I've looked in the mirror and finally said, holy crap, you're being a little bitch.
It feels so much better too.
And
it feels so much better looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
And taking accountability and then becoming better, right? There's something amazing about that. Is realizing what's wrong and then actually improving those things.
Yeah. And listening to all the talking heads, all the news outlets, all the management partners, it's easy to say, because they want to say too, it's not your fault.
Right.
It's not my fault. Mm-hmm. They don't say that. They just say, it's not your fault. It's the market. You're doing better than most, right? You're doing okay.
It's so good.
And so it's not your fault, right? Right. But that's, right. I say it because I hear it all day, every day.
Yeah.
And yet I pull up the numbers and I say, well, let's look at it. Huh? Let's see. Let's see if the numbers show that. Mm-hmm. Over and over and over. How many times do we meet for lunch? Every single day.
Yeah.
You and Jacob and I. We meet for lunch and we talk about what's going on. And we're going through the day. And I tell you these stories. Mm-hmm. And it's like the same. It's like a broken record. It's not your fault. You know, and indirectly, they're saying it's not my fault either.
Right.
As a management partner or somebody else. It's not my fault either. It's the market. The market shifted.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Let's level someone's emotions here a little bit. Okay. Right? Okay, it's a good time to buy, saturated, blah, 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 all these things. Now, what are some of the returns someone should actually be expecting? Are people hearing this and they're like, oh, I'm going to make thousands of dollars in no time? Or is this, hey, you want to just break even right now? What's like a good expectation someone should have coming into this?
So there's four measurable returns, a fifth with short-term rentals that is kind of an intangible return.
Okay.
Lots of people say, what's my cash on cash return? I want to know what my cash return is. Mm-hmm. How much am I getting back? Which is an odd thing for people to chase, because nobody chases that when they put money in the stock market or their 401ks or anything else, right?
True.
And so it's very interesting to me that when they get into real estate or whatever else, they start chasing cash on cash returns,
right?
Which that's important. That's your cash flow. You know, I don't like negative properties or break. I like break even or positive cash flow properties. I don't like negative cash flow properties.
Right.
But it's only one of the things that we're measuring. And it's usually the smallest needle mover when it comes to your actual return on the investment.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so when we're looking at cash on cash return, I'm usually targeting, my personal targets are somewhere in that 5 to 8% range.
Okay.
And I want to be able to have properties that are going to stabilize around a 15 to 25% cash on cash return. And it's all dependent on the market.
Okay.
Now, there's an inverse relationship to cash flow and then quality assets, quality markets. And that is appreciation.
Okay.
So there's an inverse relationship between cash flow and appreciation in higher appreciating markets. Okay. Like if I look at a market and I say, hey, for the past 20 years, this thing's been averaging 8.5-9% appreciation. That's a high appreciating market. Uh-huh. It's going to be a high acquisition cost market, which is going to in turn drop your cash on cash return, your cash flow.
Okay.
But because that property is averaging 8%, that can be a significant return in a 5 to 10 year time horizon for you.
Okay. Right?
Because of the power of leverage on properties. If I put $500,000 down on a property and I'm putting 20%, or I'm buying a $500,000 property and I'm putting 20% down, I'm putting $100,000 into that property.
Right.
Well, if I'm putting $100,000 into that property and then that property is going up 8% a year, 8% equals $40,000 in equity every single year clipping away on my $100,000 investment. So let's say I was getting a 10% cash on cash return. I'm making 10 grand for my cash on cash.
Right.
I just made 40 grand for my appreciation of 8% because $500,000 property went up to 540. I only put 100 in. I got a 40% return on that.
Wow.
So right now I'm at a 50% annual return just on that investment.
Wow.
8% with a 10% cash on cash return. Mm-hmm. So those are two of the four things that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
Next is your note pay down. Depending on the type of note you have, people are buying or renting your property, using your property. Mm-hmm. You're paying that mortgage with somebody else's money.
Right.
Right. So all of a sudden at the end of the year, I paid down that mortgage a certain amount every year. You got to figure out what that is based on your loan product. Who knows what that is? Let's say it's another, you paid your note down by $5,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's another 5% return. So in this scenario, I'm at 55% year one.
Come on.
Return on investment. The biggest one that we haven't talked about is the taxes, our tax savings by buying properties.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate is a really good vehicle to leverage tax savings, specifically short-term rentals, with what we believe is coming back really, really soon in bonus depreciation at 100%, where we have a short-term rental loophole where you don't need to be a real estate professional to take bonus depreciation. Won't dive into all the details there, but it's likely you're going to be able to cost seg out somewhere around 20 to 30% of that property. Let's say it's 25% of a $500,000 property. All of a sudden, I'm bringing another $125,000 write-off. I'm at a 37% tax bracket, I'm saving $40,000 in taxes that I'm paying the IRS.
Come on.
So now all of a sudden I got $55,000 plus in returns, $40,000 in tax savings. All of a sudden, I'm pretty close to 100% return on investment year one. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yet some people will say, I don't really want that one, Sean. Yeah. Remove, let's say we remove the 10% cash on cash.
Okay.
And we have a break-even property.
Right.
And I still got all of those other ones.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm still getting a 70, 80% return on my investment year one.
Come on.
People will do that all day long. Yeah. Smart investors, that's why they love real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Newbie, in like average, like investors that have not been inexperienced investors in real estate. I don't want to say newbie, but just more inexperienced with real estate.
Right.
They chase that cash on cash return. When you stack those other returns up, and the fifth one that we didn't talk about with short term rentals is personal use.
Oh yeah.
You know, you go use the property a couple times a year with your friends and family, and you get to enjoy it. Again, intangible return, but a huge lifestyle upgrade by owning these types of properties. It's why I love these assets right now, and why you can become very, very wealthy on break even properties, because in a long time horizon, the cash flow is not really going to be a needle mover for you.
Yeah.
I want some, I don't want to pay for this property every single month. And I love cash flow. Right. I love when we make money with our properties. It's great to have cash flow, but all these other returns on investment are a big deal as well.
Right.
When it comes to your wealth building, you know, ultimately, especially through a 5 or 10 year time horizon.
Mm.
Hey guys, real quick, we are seeing record amounts of money being spent by guests visiting short-term rentals across the board. Yet many property owners are struggling to make the money that they want with those properties. So if your property is not performing like you'd hoped and you're crossing your fingers thinking that maybe it's going to get better soon, then you're going to be very, very disappointed because your property is performing exactly how you have it set up to perform. The good news is you're probably a lot closer to making money than you realize. I just hosted a live 3-day workshop on how to revitalize a struggling property where I covered the only 3 things that you need to dial in to succeed at the top of the short-term rental markets. And I'm going to send it to you absolutely free for being one of our podcast listeners. In these recorded trainings, I give you actionable steps on what you need to do to turn your property around and make the money that you've been hoping for. So you can get access to this free training by sending us an email to support@vodysey.com. Once again, send that email to support@vodysey.com to get your free training today.
Man, you listed off some good stuff right there. That was fantastic, man. Okay, so now our last bullet point here. What do you think will happen in the future? I mean, of course, some people are going to email support@vodysey.com and get in contact with us immediately to figure out how to, you know, obtain their first short-term rental or fix it, you know. But other than that, I'm talking about the housing market. What do you think? I mean, do you see anything in the future? Do you think it'll go back down? Do you think it'll level out?
I think it's going to probably remain fairly rocky through 2025.
Okay.
The second half of 2025 will be very similar to the first half of 2025. Okay. I think inventory levels will keep going up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Supply, demand, that's going to kind of be where it's at. I think a lot of people are still sitting on the sidelines until we see something happen in the market with a big, probably what's going to spur it is going to be an interest rate drop.
Okay.
I think the Fed knows that as well. I think they're going to be very careful about dropping rates too soon, too fast.
Mm-hmm.
If rates really drop
and
you have $7.3 trillion sitting on the sidelines, that's a pretty preferable asset class for a lot of investors.
Right.
And so a lot of that money will deploy into real estate.
Okay.
Right. And so, and when that happens, demand skyrockets again, supply is where it's at. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden that gap widens, prices go up. And so, I think that looking back, we're going to say, holy crap, I wish I would have bought as much as I could in 2025 while a lot of people were sitting there.
Right.
I think on the short-term rental side, long-term, the future looks very bright.
Oh, yeah.
The consumer has shown that there's really no dips in demand. We're seeing year-over-year growth in almost every market we look at. I mean, it's very rare to see markets that are dropping in demand despite what people are telling you, despite what people are hearing.
Yeah.
And every time I hear it,
uh-huh.
I say, what market are you in? Let's look at it. We pull up the numbers and we're like, oh, it's actually not what the numbers are showing.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do we need to do? Because the consumer is still in there spending it. So I think future looks really bright.
Okay.
I think it's going to take, you know, the people who are willing to not sit on the sidelines, get comfortable sitting there on the sidelines. I always say that's the biggest mistake that most investors make is they get comfortable sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Being able to also, though, don't just throw caution to the wind and say, hey, just because I heard Sean say it's a great opportunity, I am still telling you, eight or nine out of properties that are, that you find on the market will not work, and I would never buy myself.
Right.
Right. And so, and there are a lot of markets I won't go into myself. I want to make sure I understand the numbers, and, but the opportunities are there, and a lot of people are overlooking these opportunities. I just did a podcast with one of our members, and that's exactly what they said. They said, holy crap, Sean, there's so many good properties that are coming on the market, and they're in arguably the most crowded competitive market in the greater Orlando area. And they're doubling down, they're buying properties, and these are properties that are struggling right now that are not making any money. But guess what? They're recognized, they know what it takes to operate, and they're like, man, they're so close. All we have to do is put this last 10% in. And so I think there's a lot of those opportunities, and getting those set up now, loading the bases right now, 3 years from now, looking back, I think we're going to be like, holy crap, that was, that was my opportunity time. In reality, Jake, you're going to realize this. You're really young, so you feel like that you got all the time in the world. You really only probably have in your investing lifetime, you know, from your, you know, mid-20s to probably, you know, late 60s, 70s before you retire, you're going to have 2 to 3 max opportunities of buying time opportunities. And I think we're in one of those right now.
That's
so it's, I mean, they are fleeting. They don't come around that often. And it's when you look back and you say, man, I wish I would have saw that coming. I wish I would have been able to be that person that was in the market at that time. So that's where I think it's going.
Oh man, some serious wisdom in today's episode, huh? Some serious, I mean, that was what we got. 33 minutes, man. That was some good stuff.
All right.
We came out swinging. That was good.
Swinging right out of the gates on the market on, you know, we'll get after it out of the gate. I mean, it's one of those times that we should be talking about this because you know what? This is also another time, middle of the summer. Guess what people do in the middle of summer?
Vacation.
Take time off. One, they're spending money on our properties. But two, as an investor, you're like, I'll wait till the school starts. It's always like that.
Right.
It's always that next time. And then we're going to get in the holidays. You're going to be like, I'll do something after the holidays.
So,
you know, kind of, I kind of poke fun at that a little bit at this stage in the game. We don't work with people like that very often. Our Vodacy family are they're the opposite of that.
Right.
They're the, you know, hey, take personal responsibility, take action. It's why we have the 1% club and everything we do. But kind of sorry that I'm not sorry that people just sit there and do nothing and looking back and say, man, I wish I would have done something.
Hey, man, the people here are going, it's summertime, they're vacation. It's time to make some money. Get this thing going. All right. That was it. That's all I had.
All right. Let's wrap it up. You guys that are listening, we always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. So thank you for doing that. If you know somebody else would like to be a part of these conversations, walking into the short-term mental game with their eyes wide open, share the show. Those things help us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next episode.